Understanding post-traumatic stress in veterans from all wars and getting them help if they need it. The estimates of how many veterans suffer from post-traumatic stress range widely. Some studies put the number at 20%, others at 35%. Many veterans will tell you that everyone who experiences combat is changed by it, often battling the demons for 30, 40, or 50 years. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll learn more about post-traumatic stress, some of the resources for veterans today, and treatments for it. There are more places to go for help than ever before. From the Veterans Administration to private organizations, one of the biggest challenges is identifying those who need help and getting them through the door. On this day after Veterans Day, Maine Calling focuses on post-traumatic stress. But first, the news. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. For the past year or so, I have been privileged to work on the MPBN documentary A Matter of Duty, which tells the story of returning vets and their struggle with post-traumatic stress. PTSD is a national epidemic. Its costs, both to those suffering from it and financial costs, are almost impossible to quantify. Today on the program, we have experts, some of whom were in the documentary, to answer your questions about PTSD and how to help our vets, who are our neighbors, coworkers, family members, and friends. With me in the studio, Dr. Dave Meyer, a member of the PTSD clinical treatment team at the Togus VA Medical Center, Jim Doherty, head of communications at Togus VA, Clifford Trott, team leader and clinical psychologist with the Portland Vet Center, and on the line from a studio in Washington, D.C., Barbara Van Dalen, who is founder and executive director of Give an Hour. Of course, we want to hear from you. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can also send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Thank you all for being here today on Maine Calling. Dr. Van Dalen, you drop the D from PTSD. You don't believe post-traumatic stress is a disorder. What then is post-traumatic stress, and what happens in someone's brain?
Well, post-traumatic stress disorder is a real phenomenon. The reason that we talk about post-traumatic stress as opposed to the disorder is really a matter of time and a matter of severity and when we're talking about the condition. So the reason that many in the veterans community, organizations like ours that support our veterans and service members, refer to post-traumatic stress is because if we think about what these men and women experience in combat, or anyone who's gone through trauma, you know, just what just happened in the Philippines, all of those people, a normal human reaction is to have flashbacks, nightmares, to have trouble sleeping, to have those experiences interfere with our concentration, our ability to experience life around us as we did prior to that event. The condition, post-traumatic stress, is in many, many ways what we expect, what we anticipate, a natural human condition. So to call it a disorder out of the chute, from the moment the person, the veteran, comes home, the service member, his family is trying to make sense of this, we now understand from years of talking to these men and women, to coin or to refer to this as a disorder, people think that that means that they're broken, they're damaged, they're sick, it's pathologizing, and that's not helpful. If, in fact, we don't get the proper care, the proper intervention, the proper treatment, support to these men and women who have gone through these horrific experiences, over time, yes, indeed, post-traumatic stress can settle into and become a very chronic, disabling, lifelong condition that is a disorder and interferes with all of someone's functioning. So that's the distinction. Both are real. It's just a matter of how we think about and why it's important to help people understand that what they're going through is a very normal reaction to trauma.
Dr. Meyer, one of the things I was struck by over and over again working on the film is just the insidious nature of post-traumatic stress. It seems as though for many people, it can become worse over the years. Is that what you find?
Oh, sure. And I think it can affect every aspect of a person's life. I mean, if they're having difficulty sleeping, if they're having difficulty connecting with others or experiencing emotion, I mean, that's going to affect their mood. It's going to affect how they interact with people or not interact with many people.
Who are you seeing at the VA? You know, are these veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan or from other conflicts as well?
We're seeing veterans from all, from many conflicts. We're seeing a lot of the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans, also some Korean veterans and some Vietnam-era veterans. We're finding with the that as Vietnam-era veterans are aging, some are retiring, or some of their, you know, as they're dealing with health issues, that they're left with more time on their hands. And that's, we have people come in every day who tell us, I haven't thought about this in 35 years, 40 years, and now I'm having nightmares, and I'm having flashbacks or having intrusive thoughts. And so we're seeing an awful lot of Vietnam-era veterans who were functioning you know, pretty well throughout the years, but using work as somewhat of an avoidance strategy.
And so now that they've retired, they have time with their thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Trott, one of the biggest obstacles, I understand, is just getting people through the door to get help. Is that your experience? And if so, what do veteran centers do to reach the people you want to reach?
It certainly can be, Jennifer. And often we get family members calling the vet center where I work in Portland, concerned mothers, wives, how do I get them in? And it can be very, very difficult to get the person in. However, once they come through the doors at the Portland Vet Center, it's a home-like environment. We have comfortable furniture, coffee brewing, many veterans on staff as well. So some of that anticipation is wiped away right from the get-go. They walk in, they feel comfortable, greeted, and we had that happen this morning.
Really?
A veteran walked in quite in distress and able to get him to care and get him scheduled for follow-up treatment.
Jim Doherty, I know that over the years, TOGAS VA and the entire VA system has really changed its approach to post-traumatic stress and psychological issues in general. Can you tell us the difference between just 10 years ago and now at TOGAS VA? What you have on staff? I mean, you have more psychologists. Dave Myers knew.
Right. About 7 years ago, we went ahead, and before that, TOGAS is where we have all our specialty clinics. Everything is there. And then we have these community-based outpatient clinics located around the state. We're trying to go ahead and get care to the veterans closer to their homes. And so what we've done is now we have 8 full-time clinics around the state and 3 part-time clinics. But up until, probably 5 years ago, we didn't have on-site mental health at each of those sites. Now that we do. Approximately 4 years ago, we had about 45 staff that were working in mental health. That's both clinical and administrative. Right now, we've got 105. So there's been a significant plus up to ensure that there's access to these veterans to the services they need. And what we've done in some areas is we've gone ahead and really greatly expanded. On homeless veterans, about 8 years ago, we had one homeless veteran coordinator, one person who was covering the state. Now we have a 10th and 11th one is coming on board. We also have Veterans Justice Outreach is something new that's working with Randy Liberty, Judge Nancy Mills, and other places throughout the state. So there's been a very significant plus up. We saw that the need was there, and we made the commitment.
So if somebody's basing their feelings about the VA on something that maybe they experienced 10 or 15 years ago, it's a different place now, especially when it comes to post-traumatic stress.
Yeah, exactly. One of the things I tell people is, you know, if you had a bad experience in the past, you know, we deeply regret that, but come back and give us a chance. This isn't your father's VA.
David.
Well, just some other things I wanted to mention is I think we're really starting to use telemental health as a way to deliver these specialty services out to some of the, you know, other places within the community, some of the community-based outreach centers. And we also have the same-day access clinic at the in the mental health department, which is provides same-day access for any veteran who's needing services through the VA.
And that's one of the reasons I wanted to have people from different organizations on this program. Dr. Van Dalen, you represent one of the many newer resources for veterans. Tell me about Give an Hour, who's eligible, who takes part in your organization.
Sure. So I founded Give an Hour 8 years ago. My father was a veteran of World War II. He joined, like many young men of his generation, after Pearl Harbor. And so I grew up with a very healthy respect for the men who serve and their families, and did my training, my early training, learning about Vietnam veterans and the impact of that war on them and their families. And so 8 years ago, as I saw these wars unfolding, even though the Departments of Defense and Veterans Affairs are doing far more this war than ever before, so many resources and wonderful folks working in both of those agencies to care for the men and women who serve, it was very clear to me that we in the community, we civilian mental health professionals, had an opportunity to step up so that men and women coming home to their communities would be able to access critical mental health care. So Give an Hour is basically an organization that asks all civilian mental health professionals to step up, give an hour a week of their time. And so far we have 7,000 who are all over the country who have stepped up to give their time. And we now have collectively given over 100,000 hours, so that's valued at over $10 million in free mental health care. It's all disciplines, psychologists, psychiatrists, social workers, psychiatric nurses, substance abuse counselors, pastoral counselors. We manage the network. Service members, veterans, military family members can go to the website at givenhour.org. They put in their zip code. They learn, oh, I have 8 or 10 or 20 or 30, however many available in their community. If they can't locate a provider in their immediate vicinity, we then will use our vast network of mental health association partners to locate someone. We've never failed to find care for somebody who was looking. Whether they stay in care or that works out, that's, you know, up to that particular clinician and the person they're working with, but we can always find someone. And just last week, we announced a new partnership with Google, where we are going to be using Google's technology. Dr. Myers talked about telehealth as an incredibly important tool, and that is now something that Give an Hour and Google are teaming up to provide to veterans and military families. It's our opportunity in the civilian community to serve. And those who join the network stay in. They stay in well past the year that we ask them to stay. They tell us over and over again how incredibly proud they are to provide this service. And one thing that's really important for people listening, and I know all of my colleagues on your program here in your studio there would agree, one size doesn't fit all. And those men and women who are struggling with post-traumatic stress or family members, they need to know that whether you go to the VA, whether you seek care through Give an Hour, whether you engage in service through an organization that harnesses veterans to serve in the community, whether you use acupuncture, equine therapy, yoga, breathing, meditation, we need to get the message out that there is help, there is assistance, there's opportunities. One size doesn't fit all.
All right. The phone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can tweet at Maine Calling, email talk at mpbn.net, or post to our Facebook page. Dr. Trott, tell me about the Veterans Center. What kind of services do you offer there? What kind of are you able to respond to someone, as you said this morning, as soon as they walk into the door?
Yeah, that's part of our mission, is to provide care without hassles, was one of the slogans. So we're federally funded. We're located here in Portland on Stevens Avenue, 475 Stevens Avenue.
But there are veteran centers throughout Maine.
There are. There's one in Sanford. There's one in Lewiston, one in Bangor, and one in Presque Isle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And then we have outstations also, one in Rumford and down east as well.
And what kind of mental health services, if someone is suffering from post-traumatic stress, can they receive at a veteran center?
Yeah. So we offer individual supportive counseling, also evidence-based practice as well, which is what they're doing up at the VA as well. There are many techniques now that have been researched, and we know so much more about post-traumatic stress disorder than we did back in the 70s and 80s. And that research and knowledge is available to veterans and their families now. We also offer marriage and family therapy as well, and also counseling to survivors of military sexual trauma.
Okay, I'm going to go to an email now, which happens to be from Ron Liberty, who's Randy Liberty's brother. He asks, I find that there is a great deal of misinformation regarding who is eligible to receive services at the Veterans Administration. Could the panel shed some light on who can receive services for PTSD and who should someone contact to start the process? Jim, do you want to answer that, or David?
Sure, I'll go ahead and take that one. Actually, who's eligible? There's an operative phrase, it depends. There's a number of different criteria that factor into that. When a veteran was in the service, how long they were in the service, where did they serve? You know, there's different criteria for the folks in Iraq and Afghanistan. For Vietnam veterans who were exposed to Agent Orange, whether they're service-connected with disabilities or income, a number of different factors all go into that. What I encourage all veterans to do is to go ahead and apply and see if they are eligible.
Okay, and who qualifies for a veterans center? Can anybody walk in that door?
Sure, Jennifer. So as I went over, we see primarily combat veterans and their families. Unlike the VA, we are not dependent upon their discharge categorization. So we can see veterans who have a discharge which is other than honorable. And sometimes in the VA, it depends upon the classification of their discharge as to whether or not they're eligible for services. Additionally, family members and survivors of an individual who passed away while on active duty, we can see their family members. And also, as I said, survivors of military sexual trauma.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by Maine Community Health Options, Maine's new nonprofit and member-led health insurance option. Learn more at maineoptions.org.
On the next Fresh Air, Allie Brosh talks about her autobiographical blog, Hyperbole and a Half. She describes it as stand-up comedy with drawings. But her most popular posts were about the depression that left her emotionally numb.
I would sort of have to consciously control my facial expressions because I wasn't feeling enough organic emotion to generate them naturally.
Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. You never know what's there till you look, and when you do, you'll find there's much more going on around the state than you might imagine. Many, many things to do, to which you are cordially invited to all of them. The community calendar at mpbn.net, our website, listings of events of all kinds, and searchable by topic, date, or venue. This MPBN public service is for you both as an attendee or as a sponsor. Directions on how to get your event listed are right there. The MPBN community calendar, online at mpbn.net.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, helping our returning vets who are battling post-traumatic stress. With me in the studio, Dr. Dave Meyer, a member of the PTSD clinical treatment team at the Togus VA Medical Center. Dr. Clifford Trott is team leader and clinical psychologist with the Portland Vet Center. On the line from a studio in Washington, D.C., Barbara Van Dalen, founder and executive director of Give an Hour. Also with us, Jim Doherty, head of communications at Togus VA. What questions do you have? To join our conversation, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Email talk at mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Going to Greg in Standish. Greg, go ahead.
Hi, yes. Jennifer, I would like to just compliment you on an outstanding show about the PTSD with our troops, our veterans. And I watched it last night, just thought it was fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you.
The only thing that I want to add is that I think PTSD is only part of the problem that many of these returning troops and combat vets from Iraq and Afghanistan suffer from. I think that the anti-malaria drug Larium, also known as Mefloquine, has been so controversial and so well researched and documented about the side effects in recent years that I don't think any conversation about PTSD should not include the possibility of Larium's side effects. That's spelled L-A-R-I-A-M. A quick Google search will find, you know, the side effects for Larium, also known as Mefloquine. But the side effects are, they mimic PTSD. And I know because I am a Larium victim from the military. I was, in 1979, my unit was on alert to help rescue the hostages in Iran. And unfortunately, they gave us all, they gave my whole battalion down at Fort Bragg this this Mefloquine, which was developed at Walter Reed Army Hospital at the time. It's since been sold. The rights were sold to Roche Pharmaceutical, which has had it since 1989. And this stuff was given out to hundreds of thousands of our combat troops in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Greg, I'm going to give my, I'm so sorry to hear that, but I'm going to give our panel a chance to respond. Dr. Van Dalen, is this an issue that you're following with in you, the people you work with at Given Hour C often?
Well, I've heard anecdotal evidence, and I'm just not aware of large, you know, data sets that, that tell us. I don't dispute what the caller was commenting on, what his own experience was. And again, I've heard anecdotally, but it is not something that I'm aware of that is being tracked through large data sets right now. Perhaps some of the folks you have in the studio have heard of other studies looking at this.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Van Dalen. We have some shaking heads here as well. This is not something that the panel we have today is following very closely. Greg, thank you for your call. Going now to Ava in York. Ava, hi. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Good afternoon. I wanted to thank the panel for coming together and just say that it's obviously been a long time coming for many vets, but specifically for the era of Vietnam and those affected. And my question is a little more broad-based. In terms of navigating the system, and that's kind of now a current term based on everything that's going on with the new health care, for the general layperson looking to find out where their benefits are, we hear so much that people don't even know that certain benefits are available to them, so they don't take advantage. And I was wondering if the VA system generally or governmentally is making it more easy to access and for people to find out, whether it be within a family or a friend of someone, what benefits they can take advantage of, and where they is there one central nervous system?
Right. Is there some, Jim Doherty, is there a place where someone can go online and find out what benefits might be available to them?
Sure. What they can do is
they can go ahead
to the VA website, which is www.va.gov. Now, there's two different parts when we talk about benefits. There's the healthcare side. That's what I work for specifically. And we take care of all the healthcare needs of the veterans. And then there's the benefits side. That's also co-located at TOGUS. And what that does is that takes care of compensation, pension, disability, home loans, education, voc rehab, survivor benefits. But all of that information is available on the website www.va.gov. And if anybody has any questions at any time, they can call my direct number. I'll be glad to go ahead and provide that, which is 207-623-5714. And they, if I'm not in the office because I'm on the road a good bit, just leave me a message and I will go ahead and get back to them. But there is a lot of information that's available out there, but sometimes people just need somebody to help them navigate it a little bit. And so they can call me, and I'll be glad to go ahead and do my best to help them out.
Okay. Ava, thanks for your call. We're going to go to a Facebook question from Richard. He says, please explore the possibility that the roots of PTSD in some cases may be found in early childhood exposure to violence. In turn, the possibility that people who volunteer for military service might be pre-selecting themselves to service that often involves violence, which knowingly or unknowingly want to somehow resolve their trauma. Is that something, Dr. Meyer, that you see that people who have experienced trauma in combat had previously experienced trauma, and for some reason it was a, you know, one thing led to another?
Well, we do see that, but I'm not sure that we see that any more often with people who have been in combat compared to the general population. I mean, there are people who do have childhood abuse histories as well as combat histories, but it can go the other way as well. So I haven't seen that as a very direct pattern.
Dr. Trott.
There have been some studies, which have shown that more complex trauma and trauma which is not as responsive to treatment, those individuals seem to have been exposed to childhood trauma at higher rates than individuals who recover a little bit more speedily.
In general, the compounding of trauma, though, can make it more difficult to treat. I mean, Sheriff Liberty, who we featured in the film, had already experienced a great deal of trauma because he was a rescue diver and because he'd respond to things like suicides and horrible traffic accidents, and then the combat on war on top of that. Someone like that is, would you say, extra vulnerable? You probably have a better term for it.
Well, there's been a lot of research into risk and resilience, and some people who've experienced multiple traumas develop some resilience to developing some of the symptoms of PTSD, whereas other people become more vulnerable. And I think that question's still out there in the research. We're trying to figure out what are the exact factors that determine that.
All right. Going to another email from Becky DeCoyster. She says, I'm not going to read the whole email, but she says, I'm hoping your guest today will address the efficacy of medical cannabis for the treatment of PTSD, given that Maine recently added PTSD to its list of qualifying conditions. Dr. Van Dalen, are you seeing very many studies on the use of medical marijuana for PTSD and how effective it is?
Well, I think, you know, going back to the prior conversation from the prior question, what all of this points to is that we humans are incredibly complex beings. Many, many factors affect our response to a given trauma. You know, you mentioned Sheriff Liberty and his background, and that, you know, we don't yet have the science or the ability to determine how many traumas he might have had before he then became vulnerable to the next one, or which kinds of trauma might have actually, and his ability to respond appropriately, might have actually led him to be resilient. Similarly, with treatments and certain medications or medical use marijuana, for some people, those kinds of interventions are going to be more helpful, or for certain symptoms, those are going to be more helpful than for someone else, or for certain symptoms that someone else is experiencing. So the takeaway from this is not to be overwhelmed, but rather to be very thoughtful and aware that in any given individual, the important sort of guiding factor must be to see that person as an individual. What are the potential resources in their community? Medical marijuana is not available in every community. So, you know, we need to look at what's available in a community, what seems to be helpful to this individual, how do we put together a package of resources for that person and his family so that he or she heals moving forward.
All right. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. You can email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Going to Clyde in Township 32. Hi, Cloud. Clyde, where is Township 32?
Township 32 is just a bit north of Route 9, the airline route between Brewer and Gallus.
Well, thanks so much for calling. I think you're my first call ever from Township 32.
Okay.
What's your question?
Well, I'm a bit reclusive. I would, first of all, like to thank Jonathan for taking the call, and I would like to thank you for considering it. To start, I guess I'd have to say that I am a post-Vietnam-era veteran. I entered the Veterans Administration in 1988 with some psychological problems, so I'm well educated in what you just discussed on the self-medication. of medical marijuana. But the question that I have, does the VA at this point in time or any of its satellite offices have advocates who are available, a staff of advocates who are available to assist any veteran who, let's say, being humble before even admitting he has a problem, to approach this situation there to assist in anyone that may come through the door requesting some sort of assistance? Because I don't mean to belittle reduce the situation, but when I first approached the Veterans Administration back in 1988, I was accepted, and then as time went on, they cleared out the building in which I was receiving my assistance, which is Building 206. Anybody who has the VA knows which one that is. And they sent all the veterans who were there out onto the streets. It hasn't been until recently, I've noticed in my experiences going there, that they have finally, in my opinion, a good one, started to elevate their assistance. So between the time that I first got there and the time now, I run into a lot of stressful situations, a lot of roadblocks, and so on and so forth, and I would just quit. I would stop going back. Now, if I had had an advocate who could assist me in understanding the system and knowing how it works, it probably would have made it a lot easier for me to approach my problem.
Clyde, I'm going to let Jim Doherty respond to your thoughts.
Sure. Clyde, I'd like to thank you for your service. I've been with VA since 2003, so I can only speak to it from then. Back, 15 years earlier when you first experienced that. A lot of things have changed since then, and as you're aware, we moved back all those services back into 206 that we had before and actually expanded them. But at all of our outpatient clinics, we have staff there that should be able to go ahead and help you. And the thing, too, is not just at our outpatient clinics, but also the vet centers. The vet centers can go ahead and help. And then there's a lot of veteran service organizations around the state that can go ahead and help. One of them is Maine Veteran Services. They work for the state. And they've got locations throughout the state, six locations, I believe, right now and all. And they can help you. They do it for free. And as I said, there's a lot of people out there to help. And if you're not getting the help you need, or if you know a veteran that isn't getting the help they need, please feel free to give them my direct number. I'm very sincere about that. Please give me a call, area code 207-623-5714. But you should be able to, and the other vets should be able to get what they need at the local clinics. And if not, those local clinics should be contacting back at TOGAS so that we can go ahead and get in touch with you and answer all your questions. And again, thank you for your service, sir.
Thank you, Clyde. And we're going to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by Cafe Bread Shack on Lisbon Street in Lewiston, crafting artisan breads, pastries, and sandwiches, holiday and lunch menus at thebreadshack.com.
Wake up to the world.
Hello, I'm Dan Damon, host of the BBC's World Update program, and I'm here every weekday morning with all the latest global news, views, and analysis. From Tehran to Tokyo, wherever the news is, World Update will make sure you know about it. So don't let the world pass you by while you sleep. Wake up to me, Dan Damon, and wake up to the world.
Tune in for the World Update, weekday mornings at 5 a.m. It looks like Colby, Patriot Subaru's mascot, is finally headed home. Stop by mpbn.net and see where Colby has traveled across the MPBN listening world. And while you're there, we invite you to take a guess as to his latest location. Guess correctly, and you may be sporting some very fashionable, very hip, very cool MPBN gear before too long.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, understanding and helping those with post-traumatic stress. With me in the studio, Dr. Dave Meyer, a member of the PTSD clinical treatment team at the Togas VA Medical Center, Jim Doherty, head of communications at Togas, Clifford Trott is team leader and clinical psychologist with the Portland Vet Center, and on the line from a studio in Washington, D.C., Barbara Van Dalen, founder and executive director of Give an Hour. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. I'm going to go to an email. This is from Jonas in Freeport. He writes, in your introduction, you said up to 35% of soldiers might experience PTSD. I think it might be interesting to note what percentage of the subgroup of soldiers who experience battle scenes of war experience PTSD. Barbara Van Dalen, have there been broad studies about how many combat vets are likely to experience post-traumatic stress?
Well, that is what those numbers that you quoted in the beginning are numbers that are coming from studies that look at those who have been in combat. So we're looking, and the reason why it's difficult to say exactly is because, first of all, we do not yet have an exact science like most of our psychological and medical sciences. And the other reason is that these studies are looking at different things. They're asking different questions. They're looking at different periods of time. They're using different criteria, which, again, this is all common in the social and hard sciences in terms of collecting data on these very complex questions. But what we believe to be the case is that there are a certain number of people exposed to combat experience, you know, seeing battle, being in battle, being either shooting at or being shot at or seeing people who have been killed. Though there are certain frames that, as we conduct these studies, that you find those individuals who've experienced certain things that would then we would say they've been in battle, they've been in theater, they've experienced combat. And then you look at what symptoms are they experiencing, and that's how we get either 18% depending up to 35% depending on the study we look at.
Okay. Going to Lori in Freeport. Lori, go ahead.
Hi. When I listen to the vet person this call describe his willingness to have treatment, but his confusion back in a few years ago up to soldiers.
Lori, I'm going to interrupt you. We can barely hear you, and I can't make out what you're saying. If you're in your car, maybe could you get to a place where you have a better signal and give us a try back? I can't understand you at all. I'm so sorry about that. We'll go to another email. This is from Deb, and she's a yoga teacher, and she teaches something called Yoga Nidra and wants to talk about her students who say that the yoga's had a significant effect on stress, pain management, and mood management. And she wanted to know about the efficacy of yoga in treating post-traumatic stress. Is this something that, Dr. Trott, you have worked with?
Sure, Jennifer, I can speak to that. So I've had the opportunity to go to the Kripalu Institute a number of times out in Western Massachusetts, and that institute is bringing in leaders in the field who are working in with the Harvard University Medical Schools and actually bringing hard science to the discipline of yoga and starting to understand how does it impact trauma and not only combat trauma but all kinds of trauma. And there's specialized training and so forth. And my understanding is Yoga Nidra is focused on sleep. Benefit. I'm not 100% sure. I'm not a yoga instructor by any stretch, but it's very, very beneficial, and the studies that are coming out are very, very positive. And starting to think about the service member and the veteran as a holistic person rather than just the field of psychology, which we used to think of the mind only. So we're starting to incorporate some of the body aspects, nutritional aspects. At the Portland Vet Center, we're doing creative exploration, writing workshops, bringing in scholars, taking folks out on hikes. We have lots of opportunities now to explore all of the different ways of healing, which is what Dr. Van Dalen spoke of initially when we started out this program.
Okay. Going to Christopher in Yarmouth. Hi, Christopher. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Hi. Thank you. Yeah, I can speak to the last caller, actually. Yoga and sensory training and breathing exercises were a big help to me. I have I retired for PTSD from a police department. And my question was, I learned late in the game, do they really look into how the body wants to respond almost back to the trauma? It almost feels comfortable to go back to the trauma. So you have sort of a tug of war effect happening. You obviously want to put that in the past, but your body almost feels comfortable to kind of revisit that. That was something that I had to work on quite a bit, and I was wondering what their thoughts were on that.
Dr. Van Dalen, do you want to jump in? Go ahead.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a great point. And one way to think about trauma is when any of us experience a trauma, whether it's small, medium, or large, our brain attempts to process that information. And so that is in exactly what the caller was just referencing. We will go back to in our mind and sometimes even be drawn in other ways to revisit, to re-experience. Our brains are trying to process, make sense of, get control over. And you can think about it, again, when you think about any minor situation that you might have during the day, a car accident that didn't happen, you know, the person slammed on their brakes, you might then notice yourself rethinking about that very incident over and over. Your brain is trying to make sense of it. It's a threat. It was very intense. And so that is a very understandable, very natural reaction. But as the caller said, that when you've experienced trauma, part of the work is helping unpack your body and your mind's wish to go back over and over again, because often then that's no longer helpful. At a certain point in time, that reprocessing, the attempt to gain control, is more destructive, counterproductive. But that's what's happening, and it makes perfect sense, and it's helpful for people to understand. Otherwise, sometimes our combat veterans, police, fire and rescue, you know, it feels like, well, what's wrong with me? Why do I keep revisiting? Why am I drawn back to that? They feel weak or crazy or broken. And again, the more we can help people understand why this program, Jennifer, is so important, that in and of itself is the beginning of that journey to heal. Once you understand, okay, at least now I understand what's happened to me and what is happening to me.
All right. Well, Christopher, thank you so much for your call. If you would like to join the conversation, the number is 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. We have an email from Gus. He says, I am a family physician in Central Maine. Some of my patients get concurrent care at Togus, especially for PTSD. I have noted, at least in the past, what I thought was an over-reliance on psychotropic medications. Has this changed? Concurrently with the possible overuse of
tropics.
And I think there was an overuse of narcotics for pain conditions and often in patients with PTSD. I think this has changed, although all of us docs struggle with finding the right balance. Dr. Meyer, do you want to talk about the balance between the psychotropic drugs and the kind of cognitive therapy I know that you do a lot of?
Mm-hmm. Sure. And I think that's a great question or a concern, because I think a lot of people have that, and people who are more familiar with the way the VA operated, you know, years ago, 10, 20 years ago, I think they're used to seeing more meds used. We use right now, it's primarily therapy. It's a good integration. Some of the medications will be used to manage symptoms, because sometimes people aren't ready to do the therapy or able to do the therapy if they're not sleeping, if they're not able to leave their home. Those are things that prevent people from getting out and doing therapy. So the medications are still used in those ways, and then with the goal of kind of getting to the root of the problem with more cognitive-based therapies. At the VA here at Togus, we use prolonged exposure therapy and cognitive processing therapy, and that goes back to the previous caller's question. You know, those therapies incorporate an emotional reprocessing of the trauma in a very structured manner.
And I know for different patients, there's a different kind of treatment. For some patient, it might be intensive one-on-one treatment, where other people will benefit from a group therapy, correct?
Yeah, and it even changes for one person, it can change just based on where they're at that moment. So we have group that we have an understanding of the effects of PTSD class that we offer at the VA. And we invite the veterans as well as family, friends, and we talk about the different treatments so that they can make an informed decision and then work with the therapist to figure out what's going to work best for them.
All right. Dr. Trott, one thing I found out doing the research for this film is that fewer than half of the people with symptoms of post-traumatic stress seek help. And I'm assuming that's because there's a stigma attached to all sorts of mental illness, but especially magnified with veterans because in the military you're taught to be tough and be silent and this whole sort of archetype of the tough military person. Is that changing at all in your view? Are you seeing a change at the Veterans Center?
Sure. I'm going to put on another cap for a little bit, Jennifer. I'm also a psychologist in the Army. So I'm going to throw in the stigma that I've seen across from my time in Iraq, my time in Afghanistan, as well as in the National Guard, that there is huge amount of stigma that still exists in the military. It is decreasing, that is true. Some of the younger men and women that we're seeing come through the door of the Portland Vet Center now, they don't seem to have the same stigma that some of the Vietnam veterans that Dr. Meyer spoke of earlier that kind of held it together for many years, and now they're faced with retirement, and they're seeing some symptomatology creeping up. And what prevented them from getting care, I believe, was some of that stigma. I can tough it out. I can get through. And folks from this new generation seem like they got some of the education. They heard some of what was being told to them, either in the military or post-military, from their family, from friends, from media, from shows like this. Where they're hearing that there are resources, there is help, and you don't need to suffer in silence.
And Dr. Van Talen, yeah, go ahead. I wanted to call on you to chime in. Go ahead.
Well, I think everything that Dr. Trott just said is fits my experience, our experience of the men and women and families that we see. But or in addition to that, this issue of stigma, this is not a military or veteran issue. It is an American issue. It is beyond even our shores. We humans don't do very well with psychological issues. We aren't typically comfortable recognizing, first of all, and if we recognize, we don't talk about it. We talk about other things in our society. We talk about cancer and divorce and race and sexuality far more comfortably than we talk about mental health, our own, our loved ones. And so one of the things that I think is really important as a nation, and this is a longer term issue, but if we really want to help the men and women who serve, who struggle with these very understandable mental health consequences of war, we need to do a better job of dealing with mental health in general. We expect these service members who are, you know, joining because of their desire to serve and protect and defend, we expect them to come home, raise their hand and say, oh, I have post-traumatic stress, or I have depression, I have anxiety, when we don't do that. We civilians don't do that. So that's a really important point for people to think beyond, oh, this is a military and veterans issue, this post-traumatic stress, this depression. No, it's a national issue that we are still struggling with.
All right. And we're almost out of time. But Dr. Meyer, in case people didn't see the film, I want to address something that you talked about in the film. And that is that in your view, people with post-traumatic stress are not really cured. But I like the analogy you give of what you're doing with people, helping them control the junk closet. If you could quickly describe how you come about that analogy and what you're doing for people who are in your care.
Well, when people come in with PTSD, what we often see is that they're telling us that the symptoms are coming up when they least expect them, or when in the most inopportune moments, thoughts, memories. And so what we do in therapy is we're kind of, it's almost like they have a junk closet that they're filling up with all of these experiences and memories, and they're spending their lifetime having to hold that door closed. And what we do in therapy is we open up that closet, we take a look at it, and we try to emotionally process things that they there's no way they would have been able to emotionally process in the moment, especially in a combat situation. And so what we do is we do that, take it all out, And then the goal is to put it back in so that they can access those memories when they want, but that those memories aren't going to, hopefully aren't going to come out in inopportune moments and when they least expect it.
The closet doesn't go away. It's just organized with mm-hmm. things neatly on shelves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. Barbara Van Dalen, Cliff Trott, Dave Meyer, Jim Doherty, thank you so much for joining us today. Barbara Van Dalen, founder and executive director of Give an Hour. Clifford Trott, team leader and clinical psychologist with the Portland Vet Center. Dr. Dave Meyer, a member of the PTSD clinical treatment team at Togas VA. And Jim Doherty, head of communications at Togas VA. You can watch A Matter of Duty online. It's available on our website, www.mpbn.net. There we also have links to our resources for those affected by PTSD. And the film airs again on MPBN television Thursday night at 10. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. John Keimel ran the board, and we had help from the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our podcast, by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. Tomorrow on the program, with the holidays fast approaching, we offer tips and suggestions for throwing the perfect Thanksgiving dinner or holiday party, whether for 2 or 200 guests. Share your stories of great and not so great holiday parties you have been to. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.